Highbridge Audio and the Mysterious Press present Bear is Broken by Lachlan Smith. Read by R.C. Bray. Original material copyright 2013, Lachlan Smith. Recording copyright 2012, Highbridge Company, and recorded by arrangement with Mysterious Press, an imprint of Grove Atlantic Inc. Chapter 1. This is how it happens. I am standing on the sidewalk with my brother Teddy while he listens to this morning's phone messages. We are outside Coruna, where Teddy always eats when he's in trial at 400 McAllister, the Civic Center courthouse, which has increasingly been forced to receive the overflow from San Francisco's criminal docket at 850 Bryant, down under the elevated freeway 8.5 blocks south of Market. Message after message, client after client, he listens long enough to identify the caller, then deletes. It is 1999, and cellular telephones have only recently become universal accessories. Teddy is one of the few private criminal defense lawyers I know who gives out his cell number to clients. I'm not sure why, since he never answers the phone and always deletes the messages before he hears them. It's the last week of November, and warm as summer, the kind of day people think of when they imagine how it must be to live in California. I got my bar results last Friday and took the attorney's oath Monday morning. I thought Teddy might at least take me to dinner, give me some subtle but unmistakable sign that in his eyes I've become someone. In wishful daydreams, I imagine him leading me to the empty office beside his own, unused since he and Jeannie split 2 years ago, and telling me, "This is yours now, kid. Try to remember how ignorant you are and you might make a good lawyer. Now you're just a half-trained monkey in a suit, but with God's help, someday you'll be a man." My brother often talks like this, although he hasn't done anything so magnanimous as offer to bring me into his practice. Jeannie's office is still locked, her unwanted stuff still boxed up in there, the desk coated with dust, and I am still my brother's monkey boy, as he calls me, and it does not occur to him to trust me with any task more complicated than filing papers with the court clerk's office. My workspace is a precarious corner of Teddy's desk with hardly room to balance a legal pad. I catch the sound of a woman's quavering voice serving up unheard entreaty. Then Teddy hits delete one last time and slides the phone into his pocket. The car is coming, though neither of us can know to look for it. It must have already turned off Market onto McAllister. Probably it's waiting in the throng of noontime traffic behind the red light at Leavenworth. My brother stabs out his cigarette in the sand bucket and turns to me with a sardonic look as if to say, "You're still here?" I open the heavy door of the restaurant, wait for a group to come out, then nod to Teddy and follow him in. The hostess smiles at him, and he leans in close to whisper something into her ear, looking past her with a wolfish smile. I don't know what he says, but it causes her to blush, her hand going to the base of her jaw as she turns to lead us to our table, giving Teddy a smile and a hand on the shoulder as she does so. At 250 pounds, you would think my brother would have lost some of his attractiveness to women. You'd also think you would be slow on the tennis court, but on both counts you would be wrong. My brother reminds me of one of those glamorous movie stars starting to go to seed, a bloated Brando or Wells, a brilliance realized most fully in its decadent form. He is brilliant, no one doubts that. Through win after win, Teddy has become one of the most sought-after criminal defense lawyers in Northern California. He likes Coruna for precisely the reason many other lawyers avoid it. At lunchtime, it's packed with city hall types, people who come to see and be seen. A juror or two invariably wanders in, and there's my brother sitting at his table in this upstanding establishment as calmly and seriously as if he hasn't any doubt of winning the case, as if he's already won, his briefcase unopened on the bench beside him. He hasn't explained this to me, but after 4 months of shadowing him and doing what he calls his monkey work, I'm beginning to understand. The waitress comes, and Teddy orders what he always orders, the Caesar salad with double anchovies and a glass of Cabernet. I get the club sandwich and fries. We were up half the night practicing his closing statement, and my head feels stuffed with cotton. Almost as soon as Teddy begins the argument, he will abandon his prepared script, yet he's compulsive about certain things, treating preparation as a superstitious ritual, like the extra anchovies on his salad or our father's cufflinks on his wrists. The shooter must be out of the car now, crossing the street to the restaurant, the driver continuing around the block to the parking lot that adjoins the back patio. We hear nothing, see nothing. We wait for our food. Teddy looks up with a smile. You wouldn't know he got only 4 hours of sleep. He looks animated, fresh. He has evidently decided to be charming. The shooter must be coming through the door now, walking toward us between the tables in the crowded dining room. I ought to let you close this one, Teddy says, tilting his head and giving me a pondering look. I know he must be kidding. He hasn't let me so much as question a foundational witness or even be alone in a room with one of his clients. But I feel a rush of warmth. It's only a scrap he has thrown me, but it gives me a fleeting giddiness to finally be recognized by my brother as a fellow lawyer, a member of the California Bar, someone who in theory could stand up and give this afternoon's closing argument in his place. And now the stranger has come up behind me. Aiming over my shoulder, he shoots my brother in the head.